to our study on prayer inhibitors. Prayer inhibitors. Sure. Let me give you a couple of places where these are specified, just for the record. We want to establish the record. I'm not going to go into great length tonight on the subject matter, but I do want to at least state the case, and I'll make the case at another time. But let me give you some specifics. 1 Peter chapter 4. These are representative lists of inhibitors. First Peter, chapter 4, and we're looking at the second verse, or actually jump to the third verse, where it says there, regarding the time past of our life. Now, all this is in the rearview mirror. Or should I say, all the stuff that's in this list should be in our rearview mirror. Okay? Should be. The time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles when, which we no longer do, when we walked in lasciviousness, lusts, excess of wine. Now, I know most of you keep it to a sociable, acceptable level these days, so we're okay. No longer is your life characterized by excess. So if I hearken back, this is a quiz point now to see how good your memory is, and I don't have a lot of great expectations given the general age of the populace, except a couple of here. How many of you remember what I said to you about excess in previous messages that we had when it comes to the biblical degree of the amount that the Bible says is essentially intoxicating, inebriating, where alcohol is concerned? How many of you remember back from those messages what I told you? Mrs. Hosh, now don't say it. Do you remember? She does. Anybody else? Do you remember? He remembers. Anybody else remember this? No, I'm not gonna give you ground on that, Jane. All right. So we have two people who remember it. All right. You remember too. Okay. All right. So, Jenny, you raised your hand first. What is it? What is excess? Okay. So all that we have to equal excess is for any amount that relinquishes full control of the spirit to whatever it is you've imbibed. Yes? So that's why I say I'm pretty confident everybody here keeps it where it should be. Revelings is the next thing in the list there. Banquetings and abominable idolatries. Now that's not a comprehensive list. That's just a representative list of inhibitors to prayer. And what I mean by that is this. Let me state the case. In the Psalms, at Psalm 66, at the 18th verse, you have a statement made that if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear. All right, now, to state the case is to focus on the word regard. Okay? It's to focus on that word. And that word means, let me parse it out to synonyms. The word, the Hebrew word, will mean to see or to look, but the wider sense of it is to gawk. How many of you know how to spell gawk? Spell me gawk. G-A-W-K. Okay. It's to gawk or to gaze, as opposed to a glance. Okay. So the psalmist, to state the case, the psalmist is saying, if I regard iniquity in my heart, if I make a place for it, a lodging place for it, or to take it further down the road, if I become addicted to it, then the Lord is not going to hear my prayers. And that sin, that whatever sin that we just put out on that representative list, whatever it is that maybe got you by the throat, if you continue to make a lodging place for that in your heart, the Lord's not going to hear your prayers. It inhibits prayer. It just, you might as well just not waste your breath. It's sort of like the same idea that Matthew uses in Matthew 5, verse 28, where there it says, if a man looks on a woman to lust after her, he hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And the key word in that verse is look. It has the same idea as this Hebrew word, means to gawk or to gaze or to make a lodging place in the heart for it. And no physical intimacy ever has to take place under the guidelines of Matthew 5:28. If a person, however, is mentally addicted and keeps on visualizing or fantasizing that whole relationship in the eyes of God, and that's all important for our lesson as I make the case at a later time, that's the all-important factor, that in the eyes of God, it is already an abominable sin transmitted. Now there's another representative inhibitor list in Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5 had verse number 19. Peter had it, the will of the Gentiles. Paul puts it, the works of the flesh. The will of the Gentiles or the works of the flesh. Verse 19. Now the works of the flesh are manifest. Which are these? Adultery. Fornication. Uncleanness. Lasciviousness. Idolatry. Witchcraft. Hatred. Variance. Emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envies, or envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, which leads again to understand this is not a comprehensive list. This is just an extended representative list. The such like, of the which I tell you before, as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. Now that goes quite beyond the pale of prayer, because it really is making the statement there that a person who keeps on doing these things, or whose life is characterized by these things unceasingly or in an addicted way, clearly is not a child of God. Okay? But it may be that one or so of these items can be entertained in the heart of any child of God. And if so, it becomes in and of itself an inhibitor to prayer. An inhibitor to prayer. Now, let me come down to the bottom of this. I want you to listen to this statement, which is the logical conclusion of everything that's involved in the entire lesson. And we'll keep referring to it later on. But listen carefully. For what I'm about to share with you is spiteful, it's shameful, and it is, at the end stage of it, it is searing. Okay? And it is this. Sin is exceedingly sinful. In that little representative list that we gave you, the will of the Gentiles, the works of the flesh. Sin is exceedingly sinful, not simply because of the inherent wickedness in the sin itself. Now, if I were to ask you to take those two lists, just those two, and rank them, worst, the worst of them all to the least worst, or the worser, least worser. Okay. I would probably give you an unreasonable task to try to figure out which is, out of all that stuff, which is the most disgusting. Everybody would probably have an idea. The truth of the matter is they all are. Okay. But with that said, sin is exceedingly sinful, not simply because of the inherent wickedness of the sin itself, but because sin always, always, always is conducted in full view of the omnipresent God. And that, my dear friends, is really the exceeding sinfulness of sin. Now, I'm not trying to detract or mitigate the harm in any one of those things that we looked at on those two representative lists. But what I'm saying is that all sin, without exception, all sin is exceedingly sinful beyond its inherent characteristic because it's always done in full view of the omnipresent God. So if that being the case, then you have to ask a couple questions. Is it that I don't believe that He is omnipresent and therefore I can do it and get away with it or rationalize it? Or, yes, I acknowledge that He is present, but I don't care. Let me give you one last verse in the Old Testament. I believe that what we read here in the Old Testament, these couple of little references in Ezekiel chapter 8, basically, I think, plague the human race, past, present, future. This little thing. And this problem paves the way for sinful addiction, and it may provide some insight as to why prayer among Christian people has fallen on increasingly difficult times. In Ezekiel chapter 8, look at the 12th verse. Then he said to me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in the chambers of his imagery? For they say, the Lord seeth us not. The Lord hath forsaken the earth. On their best day, those guys are like probably contemporary deists who take the position that God, while they acknowledge His existence, is a God who is completely detached from His creation and uninterested in what goes on here. The only thing God is interested in is what He started and how it's going to end. Everything in between makes no never mind to Him. Then over in chapter 9, verse 9. Then said He unto me, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceeding great. The land is full of blood and the city full of perverseness. For they say, the Lord hath forsaken the earth. The Lord seeth us not. I know that I have mentioned something like this generally in many meetings in the past, and forgive me if it sounds repetitious, but it keeps coming to mind. I've always wondered why it is that in condescending order, the organized prayer activity of every local church is always, makes no difference the geographics, but it is always the least attended part of the local church ministry. The least attention is given to probably the most important function of any local church in prayer. And it's nothing new. I mean, that's been noted for decades. Probably more pronounced now than previous, but generally the same. And I got to wondering about that. The last time I had a prayer, I was wondering, I wonder what would happen across the breadth of Christianity, American Christianity, if the prayer times of God's people would at least be equal to their interest in the most prominent service on the Lord's Day. At least. But typically you have, in any church, typically, and I realize there are exceptions, but typically you will have, if you looked at it, if you graph this out and use percentages or just raw numbers, if you graph it all out and you put it on a Karl Rove chalkboard or a dry erase board in front of you and hold it up, you would have Sunday school on the Lord's Day at about here. Morning service about here. Okay? In every church. Now why that is, I don't know why that is. I don't get, you know, how it is that the church basically keeps banker's hours and you still have this disparity. It's not like, you know, everybody's bailing out, getting to their workplace at 7 a.m. and punching in. You know, it's 11 o'clock. The day's half shot at 11 o'clock. You have Sunday school, you have the morning service, and then there's always about a 50% drop from the morning service to the evening. At least 50%. And then if you continue on that graph from there, you drop another 50% to the prayer meeting. Makes no difference if you have it on Wednesday at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whether you have it on Tuesday at 1 o'clock, or Friday at 3, it doesn't make any difference. It's here, here, and then down further there. And I wonder if there's any connection with this subject of prayer inhibitors toward that dynamic. So the thing I want you to take home with you to listen and mull over is this. Sin is exceedingly sinful, not only because of the inherent wickedness in the act itself, but because sin always, always, always is done in full view of the omnipresent God. Always.